Goldfields had a mixed 2018 with earnings overall falling, but significant investment in new ounces providing the foundation for growth over the next decade at least. Debt has risen as a result, but management certainly stuck to their guns on the dividend. Goldfields' gold reserves in South Deep have become a less prominent feature for the company's credit profile. Looking at it, giving the increased levels of production from Australia and elsewhere, which has a track record of being a far more stable mining jurisdiction than what we can boast of here in South Africa. And the continued overperformance of Goldfields mines outside South Africa really offset the underperformance of South Deep. But its last remaining South African asset continues to lose money and drag down the overall performance of the mid-tier gold miner. I've got CEO Nick Holland on the line. Evening, Nick. As I said, 2018, almost a tale of two issues here, the South Africa operations versus the ex-South Africa operations. Now, talk to me about South Deep initially. You announced that restructuring at South Deep towards the middle of last year, essentially shrinking the mine to profitability, cutting down the overhead structure to the current production level, and that's now finalized. How has that progressed for you?
Well, it's been a difficult process, Michael, because we've had the unions fighting us all the way and a protracted strike of 45 days. So I think it cost everybody a lot of money, us and the employees who didn't get paid. And it's unfortunate because we could have actually averted a long process of industrial dispute. But be that as it may, it's water under the bridge. We've done the restructuring, and the good news out of that is we've now reduced our cost base by around 800 million rand. That's a huge reduction. We have taken around 400 million rand out of our capital base. So we have significantly curtailed our costs, our footprint, and we have focused the mine now on the shorter-term deliverables. That's what we're after. And we're going to take this step by step. We're not going to get ahead of ourselves here. And we've set some targets, really, which are fairly modest in comparison to where we could be and where we should be. But I think what we want to do is hit these numbers, get as close to break-even as we possibly can, and then build from there. So That's really the short-term goal. I don't think we can put something in as a goal in the short run that's too ambitious, given the legacy of disappointment here. But this major step of restructuring the mine, which we've never done before, I think is an important catalyst for an improvement.
And I think in light of what the market has heard in the past, probably the prudent decision here, because the market has seen several strategies, as you said, to fix South Deep over a number of years. And I think the question continues to be, why will it be any different this time round? And as you've just demonstrated, 800 million out of your cost base, reining back 400 million in capex, it's 1.2 billion in total, and setting far more realistic targets, does seem to, at least at this stage, re-establish some belief and confidence in this turnaround strategy. Amongst the big institutional investors that you meet, are they satisfied up to this point?
It's early days yet. We're starting to talk to shareholders about what we're doing, and I think they are waiting, obviously, to hear from us. We couldn't really say much before the results came out and the guidance for 2019 came out. So we'll be talking to all of them over the next week or so, and we'll see what they've got to say. But I think in fairness to them, they've waited a long, long time, and it's time for us now to start showing we can hit some numbers that we put out.
The 2018 year also marked the second year of your reinvestment program that you obviously embarked on in 2016, and the key driver of that being to ensure that you have a portfolio of mines that continues to generate cash sustainably into the foreseeable future, and also to lower your group all-in costs. The cost line did increase somewhat this year, but what you have managed to achieve is extend the average life of mine. What's the net upshot of all the investment in terms of ounces over the next decade, Nick? Because you spent just under, what is it, $500 million?
Over the last 2 years, we've spent $500 million, in fact, $600 million on three projects, and that is Gruyere, Damang, and of course Salares Norte. The upshot of this is we have secured at least 10 years at 2 million ounces a year for the international operations at lower costs into the future. Secondly, we funded that $600 million program almost exclusively from cash flows from the very same international assets. And we've only had to dip into our debt facilities to the tune of about $130 million. So we are quite pleased that we've been able to fund it internally. And at the same time, we've been able to buy a 45% interest in Asanko in Ghana, which has a very prospective exploration belt and a couple of gold mines in very early stages of development. So we're quite excited about getting involved there. So I would say overall, we're in good shape for the future. And you know, you say this against the context of an industry that is looking to consolidate on the back of running out of road, running out of life. We've been ahead of the curve, we believe, over the last 2-3 years and put ourselves in a strong position for the future. So if we follow our strategy, I think we can deliver significant value.
Getting ahead of my next question there, Nick, because you did poo-poo the rumor that there were talks between yourselves and AngloGold, and it has been the talk of the sector at mining in Indaba recently. Everyone was talking about the grip of consolidation speculation fever in the gold sector at the moment. And if you just look at that particular deal, it would create an entity that would be the third largest in the world. But the big question is whether or not it would be really worth your while in terms of the combined cost curve profile. Looking at Anglo's and yours, it certainly looks compelling. It looks an attractive proposition. Is this something that you might consider in the future?
Well, there's no plans afoot to do anything other than deliver the very same strategy we just talked about. And as I say, we have placed ourselves in a position where we want to be able to decide our destiny. Big mergers often generate a lot of negative synergies. Culture has to be meshed together from two different entities. I've been through a merger like this some years ago. It takes time. Too many minds, too many people, takes a long time to sort out. I'd rather focus on a smaller portfolio of the best kind of projects and mines that you could put together and deliver the value. That's why the industry moved away from some of these big deals 10 years ago. But look, things change. We'll never say never, but it's not our strategy right now.
And on the capital allocation decision to stick with your dividend, considering that your debt did increase slightly, just take me through the thinking and the rationale behind that decision.
Well, we've always paid a dividend. We are proud of the fact that we give shareholders a dividend every half year. And in fairness, the international operations made $500 million before project capital. And why should we prejudice the shareholders in not getting at least a modest portion of that? It's not a big dividend, but importantly, it keeps the dividend meter ticking over. Mm. So that was part of the decision. But also, we wouldn't want people to think that we're going to just turn on and turn off the dividend willy-nilly. Try and keep a consistent record of paying at least something.
And looking at the difference between your Australian operations and the South African operations, it's hard not to compare the two in the two operating environments. During the week of mining in Indaba that you announced the deal with Aggreko to build that massive solar installation at your Granny Smith plant. And the fact is, you're going into the corporate PPA market in Australia before South Africa, in a country where we have a power crisis. So quite clearly, the environment in Australia is far more welcoming to structure that kind of transaction. We really need to turn things around, not only in the power side, Nick, but the talk in the mining industry of how do we turn things around? There was all manner of plenary session and talk after talk about confidence and rebuilding the confidence in the sector at the mining in Indaba. What would you like to see? We don't have to reinvent the wheel. What are they doing well in Australia that we could implement here to really reinvigorate growth in our mining industry?
Well, firstly, they've got very stable policy for many years. They've got a clear set of rules that are applied. We keep changing our policy. We don't have consistency. You know, even on the new mining charter, there's an issue on renewals of licenses, which were part of the initial licenses issued, and now we're changing the game there. That makes people very nervous. The Eskom crisis has been coming for a long time. It happened in 2008, that's 11 years ago. We didn't learn the hard lessons we should have learned from 2008, and it feels like a deja vu for me. We're just going through the same issues. And if we don't take a strong lead on Eskom and break it up and privatize it, I don't believe that we're going to find sustainable solutions here. The one silver lining there, Michael, is at least now I think IPPs and solar and renewables projects will receive earlier approval than what was the case before, because frankly there's no alternative. And maybe that's a good thing in the long run.
A lot of people saying that the pressure inside the system is now too much to withstand, and it will unleash very positive forces. Well, there is always the small matter of politics that stands in between the rational and the potentially destructive and irrational. But I'd like to see the glass half full as well. Nick, always a great pleasure chatting to you, and good luck with your year ahead as you continue to turn around South Deep and grow and discover new ounces outside South Africa. Take care.
Thank you very much, Michael. All the best to you.
That was Goldfield CEO Nick Holland reporting back on what was a tough year, but looking through the numbers, really establishing the mid-tier gold miner for a decade of solid growth from here.
This is Classic Business with Michael Avery on Classic 1027 in Gauteng and FMR in Cape Town.
That's it from the Classic Business team for this week. Thanks for tuning in. My thanks to producer Andries Mhlanga. Another fantastic week, Andries. Sound engineers Mdu Tlale and Matawa Tawa Radebe down in Cape Town. To take you into the weekend, Rod Miller standing by for our Cape Town listeners, and Carolyn Stain with the double bill of classic cocktails over in Gauteng. Till Monday, good night.